Good afternoon, fellow saxophone devotees. You're listening to Saxophone à la Brumidi, broadcasting on the CITR 101.9 FM from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people. You're listening to Eugene Botza's aria for the saxophone and piano, performed by Otis and Haruko Murphy, a classic that one cannot recreate unless performed with restraint. You're listening to Saxophone à la Brumidi on the CITR 101.9 FM, and you just heard Botza's aria played by Otis Murphy. This next piece is by saxophonist Anthony Braxton from his album For Alto, which was recorded in 1969 and released in 1971. It's called Dedicated to Multi-Instrumentalist Leroy Jenkins. Leroy Jenkins was an improvisationalist with the Creative Construction Company, which existed in the early 1970s. He was a violinist and a composer, and he's one of the many musicians and composers that Braxton dedicates his music to on this album. Now, For Alto is deemed ahead of its time, as it's one of the first quote-unquote jazz albums of completely solo saxophone. One might say it's ahead of its time, but I would say it's ontological, in a sense, or Mark Fisher writes, in the metaphysics of crackle, Afrofuturism, and hauntology, that sonic hauntology is exercised by the problem of memory and its imperfect recovery.
I miss Albert, being that we're speaking of Miss Tyler. I mean, we all seem to fall, we all must fall somewhere along the line, and I think Albert was taken a little premature. Albert was like one of the guys that learned very early how to know who he was and how to deal with what he was about, which was his character, his music, and beautiful people, you know.
You're listening to Saxophone a la Permitie on the CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory in Vancouver. And here I am in the studio today. I'm back. My voice is back. It was gone, but now it's back. And I'm here today to play some more saxophone music. So, yeah, I'm going to get started with this track, Liam Bailey, Young in Love, been listening to this. And then I kind of have a, like, saxophone one-on-one, saxophone 101 session for y'all today. Just to go over some of the classics, the standard, essential standard repertoire for the classical saxophone. So if that interests you, stay tuned.
I got lost like many foolish ones.
So I thought I'd start today's episode with my favorite, or one of my favorite pieces to perform on the saxophone, and that is Claude Debussy's Rhapsody for alto saxophone and orchestra. So the reason why this is my favorite piece, I guess, is partly because Debussy is one of my favorite classical impressionist composers, and also I just think the story behind this piece kind of describes his attitude towards music, which I think is great, but it is also is kind of controversial. But this piece was actually commissioned by Elise Hall, who is she was a saxophonist, but she's also kind of like a saxophone entrepreneur, musical entrepreneur, when it came to getting the saxophone out there and heard by composers in its like early years of development, or like early years of just being an instrument that wasn't well known about. And her husband was a surgeon, and he recommended that she take up saxophone to like mitigate her symptoms of hearing loss, which is also interesting because, yeah, I think music could help with that, and that's beside the point, though. Debussy, you can sort of see, like, his attitude towards music in this piece, not just in the music, but kind of in his correspondences regarding the commission itself from Elise Hall. In his letters, it's, like, interesting what he has to say. He writes in one letter to his wife, Lily, about Elise Hall. This is in June of 1903. He writes to her, and I quote, "That Elise Hall is not content with being American, permits herself to the bizarre luxury of playing the saxophone," which I think is funny because it kind of is a bizarre luxury to play the saxophone. Still, I guess. And then he continues saying, "Some months ago, a commission from me via Longy, which was the French solo oboist of the Boston Symphony Orchestra at the time, she commissioned a piece from me, Debussy, via Longy, a piece for orchestra with obbligato saxophone. I don't know if you like this instrument very much. For myself, I have so much forgotten its particular sonority that I have simultaneously forgot about the commission." And, yeah, I think Debussy's funniest era was when he was a music critic. At least in the biography that I read, he didn't seem like the nicest music critic. But I also think Debussy was somewhat of a perfectionist. Being a cusp Virgo, born on August 22nd, for one. And then also because I feel like I get this idea that, like, he must have struggled internally to write original music. To me, it seemed like he was really afraid to, like, not be original, and that sort of made him into this, it's kind of, like, sassy, kind of, like, I don't know, hypercritical of himself and others type of composer. But he also writes to Pierre Louis that The saxophone is a reed animal whose habits I hardly know. It is in love with the romantic mellifluousness of the clarinets, or rather clumsy irony of the sarusophone, or contrabassoon. At any rate, I shall have it murmur melancholy phrases to the accompaniment of a side drum. I think this quote is also so funny because, yeah, the sarusophone is like this huge, it's kind of like a contrabassoon, but it's just like this huge, silly tube of an instrument. And then he also relates it to the clarinet. I think clarinet's great, but honestly, I think clarinet can't achieve the timbre of a saxophone if you really do play it in a like soft French style that you're hearing in this recording right now, by the way. My favorite recording of Rhapsody. But yeah, I think although this is his perspective of the saxophone and writing for the saxophone in his letters, and like despite the struggle that he seems to be having to understand the saxophone, I think he captures the perfect essence that a saxophone has to offer nonetheless. And I think that it's, in this composition, it really, like, the writing demonstrates the soft and warm orchestral color that a saxophone can have. Which is why I love to play it so much, is like, you can play it, the saxophone is a loud instrument in the American style, but you can also play it very soft, is something my undergrad prof taught me, is like, in the French style, you kind of want to play it softer with, like a muted or a subdued timbre rather than like a sharp, loud, bright sound. So, and I think it works perfectly in this composition. So whether or not Debussy meant to do that, it worked out perfectly. But I think he did mean to do it. I think he's just honestly a really talented composer, and so it worked. The piece is also really idiomatic for the saxophone, given the like messed up key that it's in. So those are just my thoughts on Rhapsody. And yeah, we'll listen to the rest of this piece and then be back with other standard repertoire pieces. I would say this is a standard repertoire for the saxophone, but it's not loved. I will say that. It's not loved by the community, but I think it should be. I think it's one of the most beautiful pieces that's out there.
Thank you. meditations, Marcus Aurelius sets out for us some insights about pleasure and beauty in what we could call an aesthetic framework. That is, looking at things, sensing them, taking them in, and finding something of value there that a lot of people are going to miss out on, or even just have an opposite reaction to and consider ugly. And this is a very interesting thing that he's pointing out, because typically we look at Stoics as being, if not against pleasure, at least largely indifferent to it. And Marcus isn't saying, well, you should pursue pleasure as much as you want, like some sort of hedonist, but he is willing to say, you know, there's a lot of beauty and pleasure out there waiting for you. You just have to look at it in the right way, with the right point of view, and he's going to give us some ideas about what that is. So he starts by saying it's necessary. Chre is the Greek term there, this sort of indefinite verb that just suggests this is what ought to be done. So we ought to remember, and this is a very interesting term here as well, paraphulachein. So
You're listening to Saxophone a la Permitie on the CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory in Vancouver, and we'll be back after this quick break.
Hi there. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus located on the unceded ancestral and traditional lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. We honor the ancestral and ongoing care for this land by the host nations. Media practices are often rooted in white gaze, and we recognize that it is our responsibility to shift our approach and move towards radical empathy. While we broadcast from UBC Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on or may be visiting. Thank you.
Where do you go to cry? Where do you go to scream? Where do you go to sing at the top of your lungs and play instruments and be free? You can join UBC Cry Club. UBC Cry Club provides instruments in a judgment-free zone for people to let loose and be free using music as therapy. UBC Cry Club meets at 8 p.m. on Wednesdays at the Fraser River Parkade. For more information, go to M01E on Instagram.
What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?
I love CITR 101.9 FM.
I love CITR 1.0.1.9 FM.
What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing if you're not listening to Planet Emit Flows to non CITITR 101.9 FM every other Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Pacific?
You're back with Saxophone in the Afternoon on the CITR 101.9 FM. And we're going to get started today with our lesson in Saxophone 101. Essential repertoire to know. Now, if you're interested in the saxophone and you're considering perhaps studying it in depth, either at a rural conservatory or at a university or just on your own, I have 5 pieces queued up that you must know, or at least you should know to get you started with saxophone repertoire. The first piece is called Aria, and it was written by Eugene Botza. So this performance I have here is by Otis Murphy from the album Fantasy. This is one of my favorite albums. Otis Murphy is one of my favorite saxophonists, and this album is probably one of the greatest albums out there of saxophone music. But Eugene Botza's aria is a classic audition piece. It's a great piece for demonstrating a classical tone, and it's a great piece if you want, if you're beginning on saxophone and you want to practice your long tones and just getting a very steady vibrato and sonority out of your horn. Botza's aria is the piece for that. Written in 1936, it was dedicated to Marcel Mule, who is the second professor of saxophone at the Paris Conservatory after Adolphe Sax, who is the creator of the saxophone. And so Marcel Mule is incredibly important to the lineage of saxophone because he's kind of like the second person you'll see if you look at a family tree of the saxophone. You have Adolphe Sax, who created the saxophone in the 1840s, in the early 1840s, and then after that, you have Marcel Mule, who's kind of like the main slash biggest performer out there that we all aspire to. Not necessarily. I'll play a recording of Marcel Mule after this, and you'll hear the tone is drastically different from Otis Murphy's, and that's because the vibrato was quite different back then. Otis Murphy is American, but you can see, hear in his playing that his tone is quite soft and subdued, which is a quality of the French style. And Marcel Mule is French. So a lot of classical saxophone repertoire comes from French composers, and a lot of classical saxophone repertoire also comes from American composers. So French and American composers are also integral to the standard saxophone repertoire. So we'll listen to this performance of Botza's aria, performed by Otis Murphy, who is actually one of the youngest faculty members in history at Indiana College in America. He started, I think, in his 20s, around then. Was Eugene Botza's aria for the saxophone performed by Otis and Haruko Murphy. This next piece is the standard concerto of saxophone repertoire. Oops. Not this one. The next piece I'm going to play is a standard concerto in the saxophone repertoire. It is Alexander Glazunov's concerto for saxophone. And we're gonna be... Oops. Okay, here it is. Slight technical error. It is Alexander Glazunov's concerto for alto saxophone. And this is a performance by Marcel Mule, who's one of the earliest saxophone performers there is, one of the earliest saxophone virtuosos to exist, Marcel Mule. And this is him performing the Glazunov saxophone concerto. Different. It goes a lot deeper than Otis Murphy's vibrato, which is more supple and light. And this is very characteristic of Marcel Mule. Any recording you hear, you'll know it's Marcel Mule because it will sound like this. You'll know exactly from the vibrato. But this is Marcel Mule's recording of Alexander Glazunov's saxophone concerto in E-flat for the alto saxophone. And this is much more technical than Boetze's aria, but it's also a standard audition piece because it's written in the alto saxophone's home key. So it's in E-flat, but when you perform it on the saxophone, you're actually playing just in the realm of C major. So it's not too hard in that respect, where there's not a lot of accidentals, at least at first. But this is more technical because it is a concerto, and a concerto is a musical piece that features a soloist's virtuosity, usually in three movements, and usually there is also a cadenza, which allows the performer to showcase their virtuosity. But we will give this a little bit of a listen, and then next we have a mini concerto, which is called Concertino de Camera. Virtuosic compared to the aria. But an important thing also, if you want to become a virtuoso in the saxophone, is learning how to play cadenzas. Cadenzas, I love to play cadenza because it's just the solo saxophonist, so you kind of have more freedom to sort of push and pull where you want in within the composition. But I'm going to play the cadenza here from this concerto.
As a non-native English speaker and writer, this is crucial for me.
So that was the cadenza from Alexander Glazunov's saxophone concerto in E-flat. Was rudely interrupted by a YouTube ad. Sorry about that. But we're going to move forward to Jacques Ibert's Concertino de Camera, which also has quite the cadenza. So this is Concertino de Camera, the first movement performed by Claude Delong with an orchestra. Now, usually concertos are performed with an orchestra and a soloist, but we listened to the arrangement for saxophone and piano for Alexander Glazunov's concerto. But this is Jacques Ibert's Concertino de Camera performed by Claude Delong on the saxophone. And a concertino is, and I quote, much less ambitious than a concerto, unquote. And that's the words of Arthur Hutchins on Grove Music Online, where you can find any, or mostly any, composer and their discography in music. And the title of this piece implies it's a mini picturesque concerto. And the picturesque is actually inspired by saxophone in America. You can hear influences of the jazz swing style. Ibert plays on like offbeats and dotted rhythms to sort of evoke swing. And then also the virtuosic passages sort of also evoke the coming era of bebop as well. And so Ibert wrote this inspired by saxophone in America in the late 30s. And I would say, this is arguable fact, but I would say the cadenza in this is more virtuosic than that of the Glazunov concerto. But that could be argued, that could be disputed. But this is just the first movement. There's only two movements in this concertino. And it's probably one of the most virtuosic pieces for the saxophone and piano. The piano part, the piano reduction from the orchestral score is also insane. So not only do you have an incredibly talented saxophone soloist playing this piece, but you also have to have an incredibly talented pianist, accompanist, or entire orchestra to play along with you. So this is Concertino de Camera, performed by Claude Delong. And so there's a first movement for this, Allegro con moto, and then there's a second movement. There's no third movement, but the second movement starts out slow and then moves into a faster section that sort of plays on the themes from the first movement. So it is very similar to a three-movement standard concerto, but it is sort of a smaller, mini, picturesque version of it. I also have another version here, older version, and this is performed by Marcel. So again, it's got that deep, vibrating vibrato. Any saxophone could attribute to Marcel Mule. The next piece I have in our top five pieces, essential repertoire to know, saxophone 101, is Fernand de Krug's Sonata in C sharp. Now this is a standard piece because it's well known in the saxophone community for its beauty, to say the least. It's it has impressionist qualities. It's very French impressionist and plays with polytonality, similar to a lot of Debussy's music. And it was actually written for alto saxophone or viola. So right now I have the viola version here, performed by Hilary Herndon. But it was originally written for saxophone, and it was dedicated to Marcel Mille. And Marcel Mille actually did make a recording of the third movement titled Felice, which is sort of like a spinning movement, very fast, also very virtuosic, and very idiomatic for the saxophone. But this was written by Fernand de Kroeck, a composer who contributed over 40 works to the saxophone repertoire, and Sonata in C-sharp ended up being one of the most famous pieces, loved by both the saxophonists and listeners. For it's kind of like, I'd say it's like the number one pop hit of saxophone repertoire. But here we have the viola version, and I also have my own version of the third movement queued up here. So we can also listen to what it sounds like on the saxophone. So this is the third movement, titled Filius, and Sonata for saxophone, Sonata in C-sharp, is four movements, standard sonata form. But moving forward to our last piece to know in the standard saxophone 101 essential repertoire rapid-fire course here on my radio show, is my personal pick. I wouldn't say this is the standard repertoire. At least it hasn't been for quite some time. I feel like it is now, though. And it's William Grant Still's Romance. And I think the story behind this is so interesting. And one of the reasons why I think it should be part of the standard repertoire. It's very similar to Boetze's aria in that it's a short art piece that sort of demonstrates the performer's tone and long tone and just expression in how they move through the phrases. But Romance, written by William Grant Still, was actually the only piece that Still wrote for the saxophone, and it was commissioned by the American saxophonist Sigurd Rascher. So Rascher actually wrote to Still on multiple occasions about commissioning a piece for the saxophone, the American style, because William Grant Still is an American composer, and Sigurd Rascher is also an American. However, he was born in Germany, spent a lot of time in Europe, and frequently traveled. But Rascher wrote in a letter to Still that he said, and I quote, "My aim now is to effect a better appreciation of the saxophone as a musical instrument by playing and demonstrating in colleges, schools, and in conventions." And then he also writes, "I am full of joy that you're interested to write a piece, and I will play it often." And so Sigurd Rascher I guess, was looking for more music in the American style and more just like beautiful character or art pieces to perform. I guess to show that saxophone is a musical instrument, because saxophone did get a lot of hate back in the day when it was first created. It kind of, you know, came out a little bit later than most orchestral instruments. So the saxophone lineage is a lot shorter than other orchestral instruments, because it was only invented in the 1840s and officially patented by Adolf Sax in 1846. So unlike string instruments, where you have super long lineage, if you're a student, then you have your teacher's teachers, your teacher's teacher's teacher, it goes back and back and back. For the saxophone, for me as a student of saxophone, there was only my teacher and then two teachers before that to get to Adolf Sax in the family tree. So because of this, the saxophone is not a regularly occurring instrument in the orchestra, and it's often featured as a soloist instrument in many pieces when it is in the orchestra. Some orchestral pieces that feature the saxophone are Darius Milhaud's La Création du Monde, which has an alto solo entirely throughout, which is also inspired by American music. Darius Milhaud is a French composer that was super interested in the American style and how to portray America, and the saxophone kind of embodied that. And Maurice Ravel's Bolero has three saxophones, a soprano, soprano, and alto. Another classic orchestral piece. So that's the saxophone and orchestra. There's also a saxophone quartet, which is sort of a unique chamber group that exists, but it actually just functions exactly like a string quartet. You have a soprano saxophone, alto saxophone, tenor saxophone, and a baritone saxophone working together, playing chamber music. We actually listened to saxophone quartet written by Gabriel Pierney called Introduction and Variations sur un Rond Populaire. And a lot of saxophone music is actually played by military bands, and I think this is also part of the American culture and the saxophone. But notable pieces in the standard repertoire for saxophone quartet include Eugene Botza's Andante and Scherzo, and Gabriel Pierney's Introduction and Variations, which is my favorite saxophone quartet piece. But that's it. That's my quick crash course in saxophone repertoire. If you're looking to take up the saxophone, then those are my five must-know pieces. If you look into any of these five pieces, then you will end up learning